This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Wow. And for everybody to really hear the story behind the book from the author himself right here today. I am so happy to welcome into the studio an author who his book just grabbed me. And when a book grabs me, that's always an exciting moment for me. And Philip Vega is here in the studio with me. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, it's so good to have you. You are an amazing writer.
Thank
because,
you.
Because, as I said, when a first page grabs you and you can't stop reading it, it is such an exciting moment. And I will tell everyone, the first page starts here in a supermarket, and woo, you will never walk down a supermarket aisle again, I think, without thinking about Phil's book. I mean, now I'm walking down the aisle of the supermarket, and I'm thinking, oh, now, who's over there? Who's there? You know, all the stories that you could just make up with just that idea of seeing somebody in a supermarket.
Well, you know, I love, so my wife and I, you know, we do go food shopping together, and the genesis or the next of this book actually did, to be quite frank, did start in a supermarket, but I love people watching, and so that I love going to the supermarket, and I'm one of those individuals who, you know, doesn't mind shopping and, you know, just people watching.
And that's the whole thing, to watch people. And all of you out there who are thinking about writing, Phil is an example here of somebody who didn't think there was a book in him. And as I've told all of you, there is at least one book in you. Now, it might be just a memoir, but it might be a fantastic novel like Phil has written, because if you just sort of step back and say, well, I know this about this thing. I know something about one of my relatives. I remember this interesting story. You might just actually have a book in you. But Phil, you're telling me, you know, it's hard to believe when I've read this book, because it is so very good.
Thank you.
That you didn't always think that you were going to be a writer.
That's true. So it was being a writer, producing, you know, a novel, you know, coming up with a manuscript. It was never on the roadmap, never in my wildest dreams. It wasn't part of my bucket list. It wasn't part of anything. So it really just happened. Frankly, one rainy Saturday afternoon after coming home from food shopping with my wife, she went in to take a nap, and it was, you know, one of those rainy August Saturdays here in lovely, the lovely Tampa Bay, Florida area, and I sat down to watch TV. There was nothing on TV. There wasn't any golf. There was nothing of interest. So I sat there, and this idea, you know, just kind of produced in the back of my mind's eye. And you know, my process might be a little different than others, but you know, this story just kind of appeared in my mind's eye and started playing out as almost a video or a movie. And so something inside me said, you know, start writing this down. And so I grabbed my iPad and I just started, you know, just kind of typing away. And before I knew it, I had three chapters written on my iPad. And I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I knew that I needed to get this story that was developing in my mind out of me. It needed to go from my thoughts and my imagination out onto now paper, and it took me from the beginning of August. It took me 6 weeks to complete. It was about just under 800 pages, so there was a lot of editing done with my. I I went on a lot of tangents. So working with my editor now publisher Janet Fix with the word Verve, we did a bit of editing and we came up with Last Exit to Montauk.
Well, it is, as I said, it is so nice to find somebody who has actually done it from that moment that you see it in your head, and then you just don't stop thinking about it and get it down on paper. And so the title is The Last Exit from Montauk. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the story? Don't give away any of the good stuff, but tell because it is exciting. And as I said, you're not sure what's going to happen, and that's part of the fun of reading this book. So tell us about the story. Where's for people who don't know where Montauk is, for goodness sakes.
Sure.
What? Tell us about.
Sure. Well. First, let me just take a step back. I want to wish a happy belated birthday to your sister Natalie.
Because
she's a February baby, just like I am. It's my birthday tomorrow, and also to my 92-year-old aunt, whose birthday it is today. So I want to wish them a happy birthday. So I want to get that out of the way. Last Exit to Montauk. It's set on Long Island. So Montauk is on the end of Long Island. The story's not set in Montauk. It's actually set in a town called Stony Brook, which is in Suffolk County, on the north shore of Suffolk County, and in and around what's called the Three Village area, which is Stony Brook, Setauket area. And it's set in the mid-80s. It's a coming-of-age love story, interracial love story between two people in their senior year. It's set over the end of the summer, over a 3-week period. The story is a little different in that as I developed the story, one of the things that came to mind, it has some strong female characters and strong Latin characters. One of the things that I really have I just don't see out in the media. I don't see it in publication. Are characters of Latin background that are not blue collar. So the characters in this story, the main character's mother, she's a pediatric surgeon. And she's a well-respected member of the community. They're not migrant workers. They live in a upper middle class area on Long Island. She's providing for her family. One of the older brother in the story, graduated from Dartmouth, and has moved up to Boston to start his career. So these are well-respected white collar. Latinos that I just don't see out in the media.
You're right. That's true. And I think that's what makes this a particularly compelling story, is that you've made this family so well. You've described this family so well, and thanks. We get to really know them. And how can I say, I'm so tired, tell you the truth, I'm so tired of the race thing, because there's nothing shocking about this relationship. It's just a beautiful relationship, and that's what we have to see. I don't see color. I mean, I know it. There's an element of it,
sure.
But when you're it doesn't matter if the characters were black. I mean, it's all the same. It's just human beings finding each other.
And that was my goal. And it was my goal of it doesn't. I grew up, actually my mother was a physician, so I can, you write what you know. One of the questions I often get asked is, what's your writing process? What do you recommend to others? And I often recommend, write what you know, write what you know. I grew up in this kind of environment in this township, actually. So many of the places, many of the locales are real. I reference the Smith Haven Mall. I reference Friendly's, which are staples in this township. So they're real locations. I mentioned things like the Hercules statue in Stony Brook. That's really there. Some of the beaches that I reference, those are there. Montauk Point, you know, the lighthouse, which is that's what it's famous. One of the things it's famous for, there's a very famous lighthouse. So these locales, you know, and my goal was making the relationship not about race, but about, you know, these two, you know, young kids falling in love, and it didn't matter that she was, you know, blonde and, you know, of a, you know, Scandinavian, Norwegian, Swedish background. And it didn't matter that he was of Hispanic background. It was just a happenstance meeting in a supermarket, these two young kids. You know, him coming from playing tennis and, you know, running an errand for his mother. And he just happens, you know, he's just came back from playing tennis with his best friend. So he's tired and he's thirsty. He wants to stop at a supermarket to get something to drink. And he happens to see this girl who attends his same school, and it's a private school, who he knows, but he doesn't really know that well. He didn't realize she lived in the area, and they strike up a friendship, and the friendship quickly develops into a loveship.
And it is a beautiful love story.
Thank you.
And I think, of course, one of the reasons, well, the characters are well drawn, and you mentioned the blonde beauty.
Yes.
And who is known as B.
Yes.
And I think she is one of the loveliest characters.
Well, thank you.
Because she's just, there's such a goodness about her, and the way that she acts and the way that she thinks. I found myself so drawn to her. And I think all the readers will, because it's just beautifully done.
Thank you. I tell you, as I wrote the story, and it's written in first person, so my goal is for the reader to, you know, as they're reading it, have it become their story, you know, as the readers are reading, but as I wrote the story, it was again, you know, it developed out of a in my mind's eye, almost as, you know, watching a video or a movie, and I was just kind of there as the witness writing the story. And as I was writing it, I too found myself falling in love with this fictional character. I mean, I fell in love with her, and I fell in love with the families, and I fell in love with all the characters. They just became real for me, which, you know, hopefully as people read them, and I've been truly blessed with the reviews and the feedback that I'm getting on Last Exit to Montauk. It seems to not only just capture everybody else's imagination, but it seems to be real for them as well.
And that's right. You did get some great reviews, and particularly, you know, when people read a book and they immediately get this feeling that they are with the narrator, and as I love first person narration, because you really do feel that you are traveling this adventure with the character. And so this was a deliberate choice to do it in the first person.
It was, and that is the narrative that I will be using for most of my novels at this point. You know, writing a novel wasn't on my roadmap. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't on the bucket list. Although I started and completed it right before I turned 50, right as I was 49. So, since completing Last Exit to Montauk, the floodgates have opened for me, and I have right now, and my publisher, Janet Fix at the Word Verve, is very excited to know that I have, you know, 15 other manuscripts in development, you know, at different stages. And, you know, I've recently submitted my second one. I'm working on my third now. My goal for 2018 is to complete two. So I want to finish my third one and my fourth one by the end of the year. But, you know, they just come to me. And I tell people, you know what, just sit down, you know, kind of tune everything out and just write.
Well, sometimes it, all of the, your life experiences just come all together at the right time.
Yeah.
And you hit it right here just before you're 50. And now you are like going like gangbusters, that you're going to be writing so many stories. Of course, the first person, as I said, I love the first person. And it's funny that, you know, Lee Child and I were talking about, you know, he writes Jack Reacher, and he alternates every once in a while. He likes, you know, he does third person.
I love Lee Child. I love the
but
Jack
he
Reacher,
does this
Reacher
alternate
novels.
Every once in a while he has to write a first person, because he just is so into the story,
right,
that he just wants to tell it. He gets so excited about it that sometimes those ones really flow the fastest, because he is telling the stories, you know, directly.
And I love Lee Childs. I have a deep fondness for his work, and we were talking earlier about your library. Much of my library has Lee Childs in it. So,
well, you know, the funny thing, now he was 39 when he started writing, and of course that was a result of him getting fired. So and he was desperate. Luckily, you still have your day job,
yes,
so
ma'am.
you can work, you can keep the day job till you can retire on a nice pension and don't have to worry about that kind of thing. But you know, he wrote Jack Reacher because he was fired and he was in a bad mood, and that's how it started.
And I wrote Last Exit to Montauk because there was nothing on TV. It was a rainy Saturday afternoon in Florida.
I mean, think about that. If there had been a great, you know, golf game.
If Tiger Woods were playing, if the Rays were playing, if something of interest on TV caught my attention, I would have put my iPad down and would have, you know,
aren't we lucky?
Watched TV.
Sometimes it's serendipity, you know, it's serendipity. things just come right, and so we are very happy.
Well, thanks.
And actually, you could probably start writing. There's nothing on television. I can't even turn it on anymore. I just can't. It's just, there's too much. And so I hope a lot of you people are just, turn off that television. And as I said, if you write a page a day, in a year, you'll have 365 pages, and you have just about, that's, I think, 366 pages.
Yep, thereabouts. Yeah, that's right.
So it's almost like, so, you know, it sounds easy and it sounds difficult. A page a day. Now, you did it in 6 weeks, right?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's almost like a little bit more than somebody does on a NaNoWriMo. So,
right.
Interestingly enough, I
completed my second novel in that same amount of time.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you've seen the story in your head and you know where it's going, and you know you have that excitement that you can't stop writing. You just, isn't it difficult sometimes when you're writing and you have to actually stop for other things?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, it's funny. Now my wife and I, my wife is my rock and my blessing, my wife Jeanette. And so she and I have been together for 27 years and married this year for 25. And she is truly my immortal beloved. And so there were many, many mornings when she would come into my office and I'd sit there and I was typing away, and she'd look at me and she'd ask me, you didn't make it to bed last night, did you? And I'd look at her and go, oh, no, I definitely came to bed. I just got up early. And she would just shake her head, just laugh at me, knowing, you know, I was lying to her. And no, I, you know, because I'd start writing at 10 o'clock at night. And I would, 8 o'clock in the morning, I was still, you know,
still going,
typing away,
still going strong.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. I'm gonna take a little commercial break. Before I do, I want to just say to everybody, if you are going, and there are a lot of writers' conferences coming up that I know some of you people are going to. If you are going to writers' conferences, please Please don't fool around. There are a lot of stories out there, and you can read some of them in Publishers Weekly, about the sad events at writers' conferences. Just have fun and talk about writing. That's the best thing, because some people have lost their agents because of actions that they have taken at writers' conferences. And if you are lucky enough that you have an agent, you don't want to lose the agent, because people are watching you at writers' conferences and they are reporting you. So make sure that you behave yourself. Now we're going to have some commercial breaks, and I'll be back here with Phila Vega to talk about Last Exit to Montauk.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-480-1941.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Love a good book? Then the Book Swap of Curewood is the place for you. They carry both new and used books. Looking for a cozy mystery, books for the kids, or a great thriller? They've got it all. So head over to the Book Swap of Curewood, located at 11738 North Dale Mabry in Tampa. Valentine's Day is coming soon. Stop in and meet the friendly staff who will help you find the perfect gift. Remember, 11738 North Dale Mabry in Tampa. Book Swap of Curewood has been part of the North Tampa community since 1984.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back here in the studio with my guest, Phila Vega, who has written a book called Last Exit to Montauk, and I'm going to be talking to him about his entire process and all the exciting things that he did when he had to get to the editing phase, because that is always so interesting. And he's laughing. Oh, yeah. It's a fun part. But first, I want to remind everyone, because the deadline is looming, it is the deadline for the self-published book awards at Writer's Digest is April 1st. So that gives you just about 6 weeks to get everything organized, to sign up, go to writersdigest.com and enter this, because it is a wonderful opportunity. And I know quite a few authors who entered, won, and that has led them on to some really nice book contracts. And I will be bringing some of these authors to you over the next few months. I'm going to invite them on because they won. And that's always nice. And the nice thing about winning, of course, Writer's Digest has just about the best contest of all. You know that it's going to be really great. And of course, the grand prize is $8,000 this year. That's up, I think. Last year it was only $5,000, so now it's $8,000. That's a nice inflation. when the what you're going to win goes up so nicely. And yes, ma'am. Isn't that nice? $8,000. Everybody could use $8,000. But the nicest thing, and it's not even the money, it's the being advertised in Writer's Digest and having all of the publicists and publishers, because they all read that magazine, and you want to be in there. So it is a wonderful opportunity. And even if you don't win, you know, the grand prize or the first prize, you might win another prize. And that's always great for when you are going out there looking for an agent, that you can say you were, you know, a winner in this prize or that prize. Now, I want to say that it is impressive if you can say, I was a winner in this contest, a Writer's Digest contest, for example. That's great. Or the San Francisco Writers Conference. Now, that is really super, because they are really, really always great winners. But please do not pay. Now, there's a little filing fee here for Writer's Digest, like there is for all of them, but do not land up paying a lot of money to enter contests. There are about a zillion contests, and I know indie writers get so many emails from different groups selling different things. One of them is, of course, entering contests. And I know of a woman who has spent maybe $1,500 in applying to contests. None of these contests are impressive. You need a contest that's real, like a Writer's Digest. And if you write to an agent and say, I won the Writer's Digest contest, or I was, you know, one of the winners, they're going to say, okay, that's good. Because they know the people who are reading these. You know, all of these contests, they have readers. And for Writer's Digest contests, they have some of the best people in New York City. I mean, we're talking all of the publicists actually read for some of these contests. So they know quality. And if they say a book is good, it's good. But you do not want to enter a contest where you don't know who is reading, or if even anybody is reading. Some of these contests are really scams, and I want to tell you, please, not to do it. And I also, at the same time, while I'm thinking about it, because I'm thinking about Phil's book and that it would make a great movie, and there are a couple of books that I've read recently that I think would make great films or a series, do not pay anybody in Hollywood to read your scripts, to read your book in order to turn it into a script. Absolutely do not do it. That is not the way it is done in Hollywood. They never, I mean, it just doesn't happen. You cannot have somebody say that they're going to, oh, I don't know, they'll read your book and then they will turn it into a script for you and submit it to somebody in Hollywood. Forget it. It's not going to happen. And it's just a waste of money. The best way for you to get noticed in Hollywood is for you to win a Writer's Digest contest, or is for that you get noticed in New York Times best-selling list. That's the way for you to get a movie contract. But in the end, the studios write their own. They hire people like me or other people like who have been in the script business. They hire professionals to write a professional script based on your book, and it's just not something that you should get into. And if you have any questions, and if you have been ripped off by anybody, let me know and send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And next week, Bill Larson from Larson Larson, he's going to be here talking about intellectual property and how to protect it, and why you should not be sending your stuff out to just anybody that you happen to get an email from. And he will answer your question. So if you have a question, send that to me too. You can find right there on my website, Radio-Joy on Paper. Go in there and you can send me a message directly from the website, and I will ask Bill your question, because it is important, isn't it, Phil, to
absolutely
be careful.
Oh, absolutely.
You
it's a business. It's not a hobby.
Exactly. So, that's absolutely what you have to do. And And so be careful. Now, when it comes to, now, when you finished your book, you went out and looked for a publisher.
I did.
And you found somebody really good.
Janet Fix with the word Verve is excellent.
And that's a nice name for an editor, Fix.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect. So you presented the book to her and she liked it.
Yes, so it was interesting. As others had their tales, I imagine, you know, I submitted my manuscript to a number of different, you know, editors and publishers. And at the end, you know, and I received a number of rejection letters, which frankly I kept, just to keep them. I'm one of those. And there was something special about Janet and her response, because she wasn't the only publisher who came back and said, you know, I'd love to work with you. There were three. But there was something different and special about Janet's response, and just a lovely response, a lovely individual, and actually she said, you know, I'd love to edit your manuscript, and ultimately publish your novel, and so we came to an agreement, and that's what we did, and for somebody who I didn't know existed on the planet 3 years ago. I mean, I could have passed her in a hallway, not known her, and today she's such an integral part of my authorship, such an important part of who I am as an author is just amazing. I mean, just, you know, the people that the Lord puts in your way and puts in your life at the right time. She's, you know, she's been great.
And so she started off with 800 of your precious words.
Yeah,
and
thereabouts.
Then there was a little bit of slicing and dicing here.
Yes, a little bit of cutting the fat, as I like to say. You know, she took a big hunk of meat and said, "Well, you know, there's some nice fillets in here, but there's also quite a bit of fat. So let's start peeling away the fat. Let's start, you know." You know, one great piece of advice that Janet gave me and then continues to give me, it's almost like she's Jiminy Cricket on my shoulder, and you know, I hear her as I write. If it's not driving the story forward, just stop. Don't write it. Don't go off on a tangent. That's going to take readers down a path. That's not going to go anywhere, to a dead end. Just stay focused on the story, and if it's not helping the story move forward, then let's get rid of it. And so that's what we did. There were quite a few tangents that we, you know, we cut off and we cut off and we cut off, and then at the very end, I mean, there were some things, you know, we wanted to keep the story at a, you know, certain word count, a certain number of pages. You know, there were some things that I, you know, kind of dug my heels in, you know, I don't want to get rid of this part of the story. And she said, well, you know what, it's really your choice, but I think it doesn't need to be there. And so some things I kept, and then some things I finally said, you know what, you're the professional, you know what you're doing. And I said, let's cut it. And so we did. So and working with her, process of working with her is just terrific. I can't say more about the word Verve and how they treat their authors and how they treat me personally. Just wonderful.
And so you start off with about 800 and whittled it down to less than 400.
Yep.
And the 400 most precious words.
Thank you.
And now, when you started your next book, were you quite as flowing, or had you learned from that experience of editing to edit yourself as you're going?
No, so it was a learning process editing the first book, and so in developing the second book, there are some tools that I use. So I made some investments in myself. I use a software program called Grammarly, which helps me stay focused. It helps me stay on task. It helps me look at words that, you know, Phil, you've used that word, you know, 15 times already. You know, maybe it's time to use some different words. So as one of my very close inner circle folks who's already read the manuscript before I submitted it, said, there's a maturity in your writing. You can already tell it's you've matured as a writer and an author in just from the first book to the second book. So because they had read the, they read the first book in its raw format, and so they've seen the growth. So yes, it's definitely been a learning process, I was able to use what I've learned the first time in editing the second time. Now we're still at the very beginning of the editing process for my second novel. I think it'll go faster than the first time.
Now, it's always funny when people, the first time they write a book and they do just run with it, and that's the best way to do it. You just have to get it all out there.
Yes.
You can't sort of just hold yourself back, because then you start getting all tight, and it's a wonderful way to do it. But it is a funny thing to look back at, isn't it?
It was. I mean, it is. And again, it was a whole process. I mean, frankly, I had no idea that this manuscript was going to become a book. I sat there and I wrote the story, and it took me, like I said, 6 weeks. And when I was done, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was going to have it published. I didn't know if I was going to, seek out, an editor or a publisher. This was a new process for me. I had no idea what it takes to get a book published. None. So it just happened that over dinner with some close friends, we were talking about, the normal things. How are the kids? How's work? How's life? And in mid, between how's work and how are the kids, I just mentioned, I just finished writing a long story. And my wife, rolled her eyes. She said, he sure did. And, right. Cause again, this was new. This wasn't part of our plans or our roadmap. And so I said, yeah, I just finished writing a story. It took me a while. And then I went right to the kids, and the kids are doing great. My eldest is looking to become a pastry chef, and my middle son's going to the Air Force. My youngest is freshman in college, and my friend Carol, love her. She stopped me, and she called me out. She said, "Well, let's go back to the story thing. Let's table the kids, go back to the story thing. What's that all about?" And so we talked about it, and she said, "Well, what are you going to do with it?" And I was like, "I really don't know." And so, one thing led to another. She put me in contact with an author friend of hers, who then actually put me in contact with Janet. And so she was one of the first people I reached out to edit and publish, but not the only. And ultimately, one of the first people I went to is the person that I went with. So serendipity, or
something clicks. It's a magic moment when things click. Well, I'm going to ask a little bit more about the book and about how you are promoting it. But first, I'm just going to do a little book buzz with Rita Moreau. So let's take that away, okay, Ed?
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. An innocent night of fun takes a shocking turn in Not That I Could Tell, the next page turner from Jessica Strasser. Here's the buzz. When a group of neighborhood women gather, wine in hand, around a fire pit where their backyards meet one Saturday night, most of them are just ecstatic to have discovered that their baby momager's reached that far. It's a rare kid-free night, and they're giddy with it. They drink too much, and the conversation turns personal, and by Monday morning, one of them is gone. Everyone knows something about everyone else in the quirky small Ohio town of Yellow Springs, but no one can make sense of the disappearance. As the police investigation goes from a media circus to a cold case, the neighbors are forced to re-examine what's going on behind their own closed doors and to ask how well anyone really knows anyone else. In Not That I Could Tell by Jessica Strausser, the author tackles the secrets of suburbia, domestic abuse, and friendship in a gripping story about a neighboring family gone missing. Due out March 27th, readers will find the characters unique, engaging, and relatable, and the ending both surprising and poignant. Hey, this is Rita Moreau, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. This is Rita Moreau, reporting for Joy on Paper, buzzing off for now.
Okay, well, now I would like to suggest to all of you writers out there that you pre-order this book. Now, I always tell you, you know, to pre-order books that I really like. But this book, I would suggest that you do for many reasons. One, of course, it's a great book, but it's going to come out on March 27th for everybody else. And Jessica Strausser is an important person. She could be an important person in your life. She is probably, if you do go to writers' conferences, she is probably somebody you will meet. And so it is always nice when you meet somebody that you can say, oh, I have read your book. Jessica Strausser is an editor at Writer's Digest. So she is dealing, and it's so funny, she is an absolute, she's a sweetheart. And for years and years, of course, she's, you know, been editor at Reader's Digest, and she's, you know, been in charge of a lot of these contests, reading all of these things, and just dealing with publishers and authors and publicists and agents for years. And so then she decided to start writing herself. Now, she turned out to be a really fine writer. And this new book, Not That I Could Tell, is really good. I would suggest you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, pre-order it. And you might go ahead to her Facebook and mention that you heard about her on Joy on Paper. And I know that if you are the kind of person who will attend these writers' conferences, she's at all of them because she's a very important person. And she's really a wonderful person and very nice. And it's part of the whole deal of being a writer is that it is a business and it is something where you have to have connections and you have to know people. And it is not easy at these conferences to get to know anybody, you know, important, because they don't have time for you. You have these short periods of time where you can talk to people. And it is always, as I always say, whenever you are dealing with a literary agent or trying to find a literary agent, you have to try to find out something about them, something that will connect you with them. You know, check out their Facebook page, see what they like, if they like dogs, if they like cats, you know, what type of books they like. Because although if you're looking for a literary agent, they always have on their sites, they'll say, you know, they like fiction about women, or they like mysteries, or they like Regency, you know, love stories. You can find out so much more about them just by looking at their Facebook page and see what kind of things they enjoy talking about. So it is a process, and you want to get to know the people in the industry, because as I'm sure Phil can tell us in his regular day job, which is, you know, selling and it's connections, isn't it, Phil?
It is. You have to, if this is something that you want to do, want to do with your life, you have to treat it like a business. And so you know, it's going to take connections. It's going to take, you know, putting yourself out there, getting to know people. That's something that you know, this is still very new for me. So I'm still, you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting people like you, Patsy, and some others, and I know that I'm still, at the very beginning of my journey, but this is going to be a journey that that's going to take me.
It's going to enhance your life so much. It's just, it turns you into a different person. First of all, wherever you go, when you can say, I'm a writer, and gee, I have a book. You know, it does make people treat you differently. I can tell you that. It's exciting, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, I travel, you know, in my day job selling software and software services. I travel. I travel quite a bit, so to meet with clients, and I've had some interesting conversations with people on planes and in the airports, and you know, while we're waiting for flights or while we're in the air, you know, what do you do? When I tell people, you know, I've also written a novel, and I've actually sold some books while traveling, and have struck up some interesting friendships actually, just by, you know, instead of cocooning myself in an airplane seat, you know, turning to the person next to me.
Now you're talking to people, and that is important. As Phil says, this is a business. You have to learn how to get out there and promote yourself, invest in yourself. You might decide to go to a workshop. I love some of these wonderful workshops where you really get to interact with very, very important people in the industry. But again, you have to select the workshop in the right way. You have to make sure that it is one that is going to be of value. You don't want to just take any old workshop. Andrew Brown's workshop, a Big Sur workshop, which is very famous for anyone who is writing a children's book, a young adult book. You have to go. You have to say, okay, I'm going to take, you know, $600 or whatever it is. It's not that much, really, when you look at it from the business point of view. If you're investing, if you opened a cupcake bakery, you would have to invest in the equipment. You would have to invest in advertising. You would have to do that just, you know, to keep your business going. And if you needed to go and learn how to bake those cupcakes, you'd have to go to culinary school. So it's the same thing here. You have to select the right things. Be careful. Don't let anybody rip you off.
Right.
But invest wisely. Now, have you done any conferences yet?
I haven't done any conferences, but I have been investing in technology. I've been investing in some tools that have been helping my writing process. But there are some conferences that are coming up that I'm going to be attending. Because again, it's important to, you know, learn from those who've kind of, you know, they've been down the path. Learn from others, and again, it's an investment in myself.
Are you doing a lot of social media?
I am. So I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I have my own website. You know, philipvega.com. So I am definitely doing a lot of social media. I've actually entered the Writer's Digest contest that you mentioned, as well as others. I'm actually a finalist in a few different contests that are coming up. One for romantic novel of the year, the other for book of the year. I know I'm doing well in the Writer's Digest as well. So these are all areas of investment that I continue to make in myself. So
now, you said you've invested in some software too, or some other?
Yes, some software tools. Again, you know, I mentioned Grammarly earlier. That's a tool that I use to help in my writing process. I've also invested in some Adobe tools as well. Because you know, my goal, not only with Last Exit to Montauk, but also with my future novels as well, is to develop it into some media platform, some media format, you know, with a movie, per se. And so they're going to be things that I'm going to need in order to develop those into, you know, take it to the next step. So I've been investing slowly. In those, I mentioned earlier that my youngest son is in college, so my primary investment is keeping him in college. You know,
then that's an investment.
So yes, yeah, so he's a freshman in college. As a matter of fact, he even made a payment this morning before I came here. So those are, you know, keeping the lights on in the home. Those are the primary investments, and you know, one day, hopefully not too off in the far distant future, you know, things will be shifting where I can spend more time focused on my authorship versus on my regular day job.
Yeah, because this is, I can tell you, just from reading this first book of Phil's, he's got the passion. And once you get the passion, you just have to let it go. And
this is something that I am extremely passionate about. Had somebody told me, you know, it's funny. Had somebody told me 3 years ago, if somebody would have sat me down in July of 2015 and said, you know, in a month, you're going to start writing your first novel, I would have laughed in their face. I would have said, you're crazy. That's not, you know, that's nowhere in the realm of reality. And the reality is,
The book is here. It's available wherever books are sold.
Sure.
At Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. And the name is Vega, last name Vega, first name Philip with two L's. And it's called Last Exit to Montauk. And everybody, go out there and get this book. You will love it. It's really beautifully written.
Thank you so much.
And I never knew anything about Long Island, but now I feel like I've been there. So that is a great accomplishment.
Well, thank you,
because
Patsy.
I feel like I have walked those streets and know those people. And
well, wonderful. Thank you.
That's a great compliment. So I just want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. That's the next step, because I'm getting very fond of audible books. And someday, if you do it right, to hear your words on screen. And when somebody says, you know, oh, wow, you're up there on the big screens, and it can happen. But it's all a matter of working and being passionate, like Phil here, and living the dream. I mean, what can you do? It's just be ready for it, right?
Yes, ma'am.
You don't know. Something's going to happen. You never know. And you're going along one way all your life, and then something just, either you get fired, like Lee Child got fired, or you have nothing good on television. Well, you know, if it goes by that, everybody out there should be writing a book this weekend. I can tell you, there is nothing good on television. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so sweet, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, and now your son is in the Air Force. I love being saluted. I think it's so wonderful. I should have been a drill sergeant tonight. It would have been so good. Okay. Anyway.
Patsy, thank you so much.
Wonderful to have you here, Phil. Phil Vega, Last Exit to Montauk. Don't forget it. Get it this weekend. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.